If you're listening to this, please, please, please go spin up a node.
I love that that's what you want to, you know, highlight to people and make sure they know how important that is.
Well, you should also join the Bitcoin Army. It's a great group of people. It's such a great forum for people to learn and to grow and to ask hard questions and easy questions and whatever. I mean, everyone's so welcoming and so inviting. I can't recommend it enough. So I'm a proud member of the Bitcoin Army, and I fully support what you guys are doing over there.
Bitcoin allows the chickens to evolve and escape that cage and just like start to have their own community apart from the people controlling them or stealing their life force.
That's a beautiful way to put it. Like, that's precisely what Bitcoin enables. It changes the chicken from being a farmed resource to something that has a resource. And that's a huge shift in power that I think people really underestimate. All of a sudden, their individual choices change dramatically, almost overnight.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Daniel White here with me today, the CEO of Microseed. And he's an author as well. This is his book, by the way. So for anyone who wants to check this out, it's called The Great Realignment. So thank you so much for joining me today.
It's so great to see you.
Nice to see you too.
This is super exciting for me. I'm really, really happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited about what you're doing and what you've created.
Thank you. What a great introduction. I'm technically the grand poobah. I'm not the CEO. You can actually see that on the website. We try and keep those titles kind of loosey goosey. I mean, because it feels very fiat to me. But
yeah.
Thank you. But close enough, I guess, for conversation. And as a side note, thank you for showing the book. You don't have to buy that. I'm not here to shill books, I promise.
You can read it for free.
I appreciate that.
It was my idea. Yes, I like to
show. It's great. And I encourage anybody to read it. You can read it for free on tinmoney.medium.com, or you can read it for free on Nostr. Just follow my link on my
That's a true Bitcoiner.
Page. Yeah, thank you. It's free information. And it's just for the benefit of the plebs.
I love that. Yeah, that's definitely what a real Bitcoiner is all about. You do it because you want people, you want to share your voice, you want to spread the word, you want people to learn about it, but it's not about making money off of it. You're allowing people to be able to read it for free. That's incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. I love your set, by the way. Like, I actually like there's a little Microseed hiding up there.
Oh, yes. I love it. This is, I love how it's such a beautiful display, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
So this is the stamping kit. So this is, I mean, honestly, you're an engineer, right?
Well, I am now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because you've
built
this. I'm
actually a legal researcher, but I have a long storied background I won't bore you with, but yeah.
I would like to hear your background. I want to know how you got into all of this. You know, what led you to this path and to create that amazing way to back up your seed phrase. So that's so that stamping kit behind me, it's right here, you know, for right there. Okay. But yeah, that hammer, is it a brass hammer?
It is. It was. We stopped shipping the brass hammer. Well, A, partly because of expense, but B, it was like way too heavy. Like, people would kind of inadvertently hit the washer too hard. And that particular iteration of the Microseed you have, the indentation for the washer is a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. And if you hit the washer hard enough, apparently they can get stuck, which we didn't know. Oh. Like, I bashed the hell out of that thing before I shipped it just to see if there's like, if I could break it. And I never got one stuck, but I've had a couple, about three or four people now that have just, I don't know if they're just got orangutan arms or what's going on, but they just like, this thing is stuck. And the one guy sent one back and I was like, how bad could it be? I literally had to like cut the spindle like with a saw.
Oh my God.
To get the washer.
I was hitting it pretty hard when I did it. And,
were you really? Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to hit it hard, but right, I mean, I just wanted to see, and I can't imagine how it could get stuck. But yeah, you're sitting there testing it, you know, to see, and it's just crazy how maybe for some reason that happened. So the new hammer is not so heavy.
Yeah, it's a 300 gram hammer. It's an engineer style hammer. It's a cross peen hammer. And we get them kind of custom made, quote unquote, in China, as far as you can customize anything there. We're actually looking, I just got a quote from a company, a foundry here in the United States of America. Like, I am trying so desperately to bring everything into the United States. And I think I can get it all. Like, I think I can get hammers that are reasonably priced and sourced in the United States. We're looking into just manufacturing the entire device instead of using like overseas machine shops and things like that.
Yeah, they're being incredible.
But the one part is the punches. Like, I just can't find anybody in the United States that makes these punches. Like,
really?
I find people that make them, but they're like super crazy expensive. Like, it would cost more than the whole kit just to get the punches.
Wow.
So I'm just like, well, yeah, I got to find something else. But someday, yeah, well, I hope, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm sure there's always, you know, a possibility for anything changing, you know, to change. But your device, I mean, it's such a great tool, because I mean, you always try to look for a really good way to back up your seed phrase, and a lot of people still write it on paper, or they try to put in some plastic or do something like that. And it's like, you know, this way, I love that it's so discreet too, because it's on a tiny washer, and it's so, you know, you'd have to like use a magnifying glass really to look at it, but you can still see it, but it's just hard to read.
Right.
But I love that you can put your entire seed phrase on this washer, and it's just such a good solution, you know,
because thank you.
I felt like I was, when I was hammering it, I felt like I was like, you know, engraving it. It was, it just felt so powerful to be like, I'm doing this. This is ultra secure. I won't lose this. And I like that you can hide it in, like, because it's a washer, you could put it between some hardware in like a kitchen cabinet or something and nobody would know. So it's just a really different way to store your seed phrase and fireproof, all that stuff, right? So that just makes you feel better about self-custody, knowing that you're not going to burn it in a fire, you know, or something, you know? So, and then I think I've seen other like kits or whatever, but they actually come in like a folio type thing, and you could see that that's meant to store a seed phrase. So it's super easy for people to notice if they were to break into your house and find it, you know what I mean? So, so this is just a really great solution. I'm so happy to be part of it. I love that I'm, I have a, you know, a code with you guys, and I stand by things that I believe in, you know, I stand by companies that are doing great things for Bitcoin and helping people, you know,
thank you.
But I want to hear your backstory. I want to hear how you got into all this.
Well, it's a little long winded. I'll try and keep it brief, but, you know, I was raised in a libertarian household. Like, my dad was a staunch libertarian. I've said this before, like he literally had a picture of Ayn Rand on the wall. You know, like, I think it made my mom jealous early on, like, who's this lady, you know? But, you know, he was deep into the objectivism and the philosophy of Ayn Rand and things like that. So, like, I had read The Fountainhead by the time I was 12, you know? So I had a very early exposure to, like, the kind of the notions of self-sovereignty and freedom from fiat oppression and all that kind of stuff. So now that I'm an old fart, like, I've had a lot of time to just think about this kind of stuff, right? And like, in the 90s, I ran for office in California, a state assembly seat, as a libertarian candidate. I came in third. I beat the Reform Party, but didn't quite meet face the Republican or the Democrat contenders. But so I've been kind of talking about these ideas for a long time. And like, I was a long-term gold bug. Like, I was really big into the gold thing. And so, like, it was right around 2010 that a couple things happened. A, my dad passed away and left a little bit of money. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go put this into gold, because that was, you know, it's God's money, right? So, but then I started hearing about this Bitcoin thing. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Oh, what's this all about? And like, the whole ethos of it and everything about it, I was like, yeah, this is really, really cool. And then I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. Like, I was trying to, like, at the time, if my memory is so fuzzy on this stuff, because it was like 15 years ago, but like, I remember I was trying to compile it from code, and I had an old, at the time, laptop that just wasn't getting the job done. And I didn't really know what I was doing anyway. And it's not like you had like YouTube videos all over the place to figure this stuff out.
Yeah.
So I just kept bungling through it. And then I tried to get some, you know, like, I was on, I can't remember what forum it was. I remember that I finally found someone that would send me Bitcoin for a money order. Like, I had to mail him a US postal money order. And I think I sent him like $100, and I was all like, iffy about it. Like, I was super, super suspicious and just like, this is a scam. I'm just going to send this guy $100 for, who is this guy? But sure as shit, the Bitcoin showed up. And, you know, but it was like, I don't remember if it was a week later, a month later, 6 months later, like, whatever price. And it might have been 2011. I might even have the time frame wrong. But all I remember is whatever I got, the price went down by like half, like in like the space of 2 or 3 days. And I was like, oh, that's the hustle. Like, this guy's got this fake internet money that he just sends you. You pay him a lot of really good, solid, hard American dollars, and you get this Ponzi thing that just disappears overnight. So neat hustle, dude. Way to go. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of deleted everything. I was just like, whatever. It was like $100, right? And at the time it was probably $50. I'm just like, whatever. I'm just not going to. And so I took all that money and put it in.
Still $50 back in that year. You think about how many victims.
Yeah. Oh, it's insane. But the thing is like, you know, come 2014, like I went, I'm kind of a late bloomer. So I left the film and television industry. I worked on the technical side of the film and television industry and went and got a law degree. And I went to school because of a couples therapy session. Like the lady said, like, you guys don't need couples therapy. You just need to grow up. And you, Mr. White, need to go and get an education. And because you're kind of relying on a bunch of shit from your childhood to prevent you from being a person. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll go do that. So I kind of picked law school and just ended up, like, I got a JD, but it's like from a ding dong law university. I mean, it's kind of like Better Call Saul kind of law university. Nice. It's not like I went to Harvard, right? And after I got that, I kind of realized like, oh, having a ding dong law degree isn't necessarily a trip to a job. So I tried to kind of polish the degree. I went and got a Master of Laws at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, which at the time was, you know, like a bar examiner's approved school. Now they've kind of lost that too. So I ended up with a second ding dong degree, I guess. But while I was there, I got to publish a lot of papers on legal research and especially around financial crimes, securities law, bankruptcy law, things like that. And one of the papers I wrote in 2014 was about money laundering. Like, it's a 4-part series for the Banking Law Journal. And I actually talk about Bitcoin in there. Like, I talk about the gal at UCSD that actually ended up creating the systems that became chain analysis today. It was all based on her research, and that was very novel research at the time. And I had this neat little description about like how Bitcoin works and what private keys are and public keys and how the whole system, you know, I was using like some sort of mailbox analogy, like the person on one side of the mailbox has a key to get to the thing, but the other person has a key to get to the other side. And that's how you know that this didn't go here and this and that. I mean, I think it was a decent explanation. Yeah. But through it all, like, even though I was talking about it in a technical fashion in 2014, even, I was still like, oh, yeah, I kind of missed that boat. I should have kept the $50 that I had. That was dumb, you know. But then it gets to like 2017. I'm like, oh, I probably should have kept that $50 because now it's, you know, but I never got back into it until probably 2020.
I started in that year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people did with the lockdowns and everything and all the stimmy checks. And it's like, oh, let's, you know, let's put this somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But I was also shitcoining and doing a bunch of stupid stuff because those narratives are pretty compelling. Like, people.
They are, yeah. Well, especially when you don't fully, even though you understand what Bitcoin is and how you send it and how it's, you know, but you just don't understand how it's so different, I guess. You just kind of have to take that time to learn it. With Microseed, you can engrave your entire seed phrase onto a durable titanium washer. It's the ultimate backup. Simple, indestructible, giving you true peace of mind and knowing your seed phrase is secured for life. Use my link in the description to get your kit.
Satoshis. So many new styles and fully customizable. Use my referral link in the description or in the comments for 10% off your order. The Bitcoin Advisor for multi-sig custody solutions to store your Bitcoin, inheritance planning, and peace of mind.
It was actually the Sailor Breedlove series, and people kind of crap on both their heads nowadays just for whatever they're doing. But it was watching, I just sat down and said, okay, I'm just going to set my objections aside. I'm going to watch all 10 of these episodes and just see what these guys have to say. And I went, oh, okay, well, that's different than what I thought, right? And but then another kid came out, it was Jason Lowry, who wrote Software. And people absolutely shit on his head to this day, too. And I'm like, dude, it's a master's thesis. The guy was like 22 years old and he wrote a master's thesis. Like, why are you shitting on his head so hard?
Is it because he's government or?
I have no idea. Like, people, I mean, there are people that, you know, take a lot of umbrage with like some of his points directly. And I think there's a greater majority that just take umbrage with him just for being a goon, or, you know, a government guy.
But I think that the more time that has passed, I think when he said what he said back then about hash, you know, hash rate or miners being like your, you know, it's like a defense, you know, it's a, I don't want to say a weapon, but kind of that's what he was saying. But it's like your tool, you know, for defending yourself against attacks and attacks of inflation and attacks of debasement of money. But I think you see that more now. Like people say, like, it's like kind of compared to the Second Amendment, I guess, like a Bitcoin miner. So, but I think like when he first announced that, I think people were just trying to understand what he was saying. And now that people say it, I don't even think they know that Jason Lowry kind of
coined
came
it.
Came up with that idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that was the thing that I really appreciated about his thesis. Like, in terms of it being a weapon or a defense tool and all that kind of stuff, I go, yeah, I can kind of see that maybe. There's some holes in that logic that isn't worth exploring. But the thing that is very relevant, I think, is that it is a barrier to sovereign capture of your property, right? So if you go back in the history of time, and that's what my book is all about, is kind of going back to the history of like where property rights come from, where the idea of free trade and money and all this sort of stuff, like people, I think universally, including all the great people that everybody talks about all the time, start their analysis about 7,000 years too late, right? And so they end up with mostly correct conclusions and very flawed reasoning behind it. So I kind of took it back to the 7,000 years previous and started my analysis from there. And I come to very different conclusions, but similar, right? Like it ends up kind of in the same spot, no matter how you break it out. But the thing about Lowry's book that was so compelling to me was the notion of zero trust egalitarian access to property, right? And if you think about how like the United States defends its property, they don't do it by saying, hey, this is mine now. Like they do it with force, right? Like massive force. But that is the name of the game going back 12,000 years. It's competitive resource capture, right? Like, can you go and take and control something and exclude others from it? That's been the game we've been playing since some big brute back 12,000 years ago looked at a bunch of farmers and went, hey, they make vegetables. I want vegetables. I don't like digging in the dirt to get vegetables, but I don't mind going over and bonking them on the head and taking their vegetables. So that's what I'm going to do today. And when they gang up, then they become a force, right? And so the natural inclination in that scenario is the people that are getting bonked on the head gang up too. And then you have squabbles, and then those squabbles radiate out, and then gangs form coalitions, and coalitions form other little things. And next thing you know, you've got really, really, really big gangs that are controlling wide swaths of territory. You can see it to this day in every American city. There's like, oh, that's a Crip neighborhood. That's a Blood neighborhood. And we go, well, how did that happen? Because of force projection, and because they've marked off territory and they're trying to exclude others from it, right? So Bitcoin enables that for everybody without having to fire a shot, because you just go, well, this is my property. Come take it. And they go, well, we can't. They can coerce you. They can, you know, bonk you on the head and try and make you give it up. But if you go, you know what, you're going to have to kill me first. I'm never giving you this property. They don't have any way to, because like, if you have a house, someone can bonk you on the head, and they bonk you on the head enough, that's their house. There's no arguing the point. Right. They just go, well, it's yours now because you're in it. I'm not. And I'm out here bleeding on the street, and that sucks. Right.
And when you think about it in the way that you say these coalitions and gangs form, like I always like to call, I mean, politicians the modern day mob, you know? So it's like, when you think about, even if someone isn't coming in and taking physically your house, you have the government who could say, well, it's mine now. You didn't pay your taxes this month, and we keep raising them. So you haven't paid your taxes, so now we own it. So it's like they're by law taking ownership of your property because they created these laws and they created the rules of the game. And, you know, so, and a lot of people think property taxes are, you know, not just, you know, it's like really, you pay for your house all your life, you pay it off, and you still never actually own it because you got to pay the government. So it's like that same, you know, just they make the rules because they have the power, you know?
Correct. 100% spot on. And that's the way it's always been. The thing about the competitive resource capture game is there are no rules for the players. There are definitely rules for the resources, and you and I are resources, 100%. Like to put it in a base analogy, it's like we're chickens in a farm, right? And the choice we get as chickens is, well, did we happen to be raised in a free range farm where we get to peck in a hen, or were we raised in a factory farm where we have to peck from a dish while I can't move? Mm-hmm. And that's literally the difference between being born in the United States of America or being born in, you know, like Venezuela, right? One, you're clamped down, you can't do anything. The other, you kind of get to move around a little bit. But at the end of the day, the farmer's still getting his meat and eggs. Like, there's still, like, you don't get to go like, well, all of us chickens got together and decided we want this. And they go, yeah, but we don't care.
Right? Yeah.
And you've seen that steadily eroding since the birth of the nation, right? They just go, well, we want this. We don't care. You know, like, they just are going to do what they do, right?
That's a great analogy.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, but that's why Bitcoin is so special, because it is something that gives you sovereign property rights that can't be taken. So it changes the game in a huge, huge, huge way that I think people really, really underestimate. They just go, oh, okay, well, Bitcoin's money, or Bitcoin's, you know, black market money, and I can go buy cocaine in Bolivia. No one's going to know I did it. Or I can set up, you know, the Pirate Bay six and, or whatever it is. Like, they can come up with something where it's like black market transactions. And I go, and that's the original vision of Bitcoin, is this is black market money that can't be censored, right? You can't prohibit someone from transacting with your Bitcoin. And what it's become,
like, reminds me of like the Bitcoin allows the chickens to evolve and escape that cage and just like start to have their own community and be apart from the people controlling them or stealing their life force or whatever.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to put it. Like, that's precisely what Bitcoin enables. It changes the chicken from being a farmed resource to something that has a resource. And that's a huge shift in power that I think people really underestimate.
Yeah.
And if you think, like, of all property in the world, sovereigns have always gone and they capture the most convenient thing for them at the time, right? And so first it's land and people, right? Mm-hmm. Because you need the land, and from the land and the people come the... So the people are a resource, it's labor, right?
Mm-hmm.
The land is a resource because it produces things from the labor of the people. And in the original iteration of the game, I love that you said it's like a modern day mob. I go, yeah, that's so spot on. Like, it's almost shocking, because if you think about a protection racket, right? Like, if you go to Little Italy in New York somewhere back in the 50s, and the local mobsters would come by your sandwich shop and go, hey, how you doing, Sal? We're here from the mob. And, we just want to say, like, you know, for 10% of your sales, we can make sure that no bad guys come in here and bust up your shop. You know, we don't want to see you get hurt. So you should just pay us the tax and we'll make sure that you're safe. And Saul goes, you know what, GFY, I'm not paying you, dick. I set up this business. This is America, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And so the mobsters come back and set fire to a shop or break all his windows or beat the hell out of him. And then they come back the next week and go, hey, Saul, it looks like you got beat up here. I'm telling you, those government guys won't protect you, but we will.
So right, and they're the ones causing the pain.
Right? So that's 100%, that's like the source of tax, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you think about the sovereigns back in the day, they'd go around and go, hey, you know, we got to protect you from all these roving bands of marauders. All you got to do is give us 10% of your wheat, 10% of your leather, 10% of your animals, 10% of whatever. But that quickly becomes a logistics problem, right? Because you go, well, how long, like, now I have to take care of sheep. Well, that's kind of annoying. So if you're a gang and you just have to go around and collect your food that week, that's not that big of a deal. But if you are a king and you have a bunch of subjects and you need to collect a bunch of wheat that week, it's like, oh, this is kind of a problem because that wheat's going to rot. And what am I supposed to do? How can we store things and not have to store them? Like, I need to tap into my resources, but I don't want to, like, just steal stuff from them straight away. So the solution is money. You go, oh, here's an idea. What if we force people to pay tax in shells, beads, coins, gold, silver, rocks, whatever,
paper?
They have to pay us that. That's what they owe us. That's their tax. Hey, hey, Saul, you got to pay your tax this week. So how do you get that money if you're a serf? You go, oh, I need to sell things for money. I need to be paid in money so I can pay my tax. Mm-hmm. So when people say, oh, money fix the problem of barter, I go, no, that's never been a problem. Like,
you made it so you're forced to use it because you need to pay the government.
Right. Money solved the problem of the sovereign storing resources and made them available on demand, right? Because if you have to pay the tax in specie, that means you have to sell things in specie. That means you have to collect specie for labor. But if the sovereign needs something from you, they can just go give you the specie they took from you to begin with. They go, here, well, we see that you sell a bunch of wheat. We want to buy all your wheat. Okay, what do I get for it? Well, you know all that stuff that you pay your tax in? Yeah, we're going to give you that. Don't you guys just make that, though? Yeah. And if you don't pay it to us, we're going to come and kill you. Oh, okay, then I'll sell you all the wheat, whatever wheat you want. I'll have plenty of money to pay my tax. Sweet. Oh, by the way, we have an extra tax. If you sell it to us, we're going to call that a sales tax. You know. So that's how they kind of tack this stuff on. But it fundamentally changes how people look at money if they can embrace the idea of, like, what the origin story is false. It's a fake narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally something Adam Smith just made up off the top of his head. Back in the day, people used to barter. When barter became too complicated because you couldn't divide a pig, that's when they created money to solve the problems of barter. That's just false. That's not true at all. It's completely fake. It's made up. But everyone buys into that narrative to this day, right? I mean, it's a very...
Well, that's the thing. When you think about it, when you think about it being that like modern day mob and how the mobster would actually cause you harm just to tell you, well, I could protect you from that harm, but they're the ones causing the, you know, causing the pain and the harm. But it's the same idea as if they are the ones that control the money. And that's why I think about it with these wars. When they start these wars, it's like the U.S. benefits from getting involved in all these wars, and they benefit because they get to print more money, but they get to come in looking like the hero, like they're saving the day, you know, and it's just, it's the false, I guess people are just under the impression that it's just too much greed in the system and too much, they just have too much benefit to do this and they can get away with it. So, you know, why it's just such a crooked system. It reminds me of that story of going to the shop and threatening that guy to give money, you know. So yeah, they can come and like kind of instigate fights and then just like look like the heroes, you know, at the end of the day. And they say like, we're here to protect you, just like those mobsters.
Yeah, well, that's like that famous like meme, right? Like, I'm here from the government, I'm here to help you, kind of thing. And there's a bunch of guys in tactical gear standing outside your door. But that's one of the things. I mean, you touched on everything so perfectly. Like, I love the way you framed all that, because it ties perfectly into why I think Bitcoin is so important. Because if you say as true, sovereigns have always tried to capture land. Sovereigns always try and control the resources. Me and you, oil, gold, trees, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. But now the most valuable, scarce resource ever created in the last 12,000 years is something that you can't take by force. You know, what happens to the global game of resource capture? Like, it shifts on so many levels, on so, and no one's quite realized that yet. Like, I don't think people have realized there's a new rule that you can't break. And like I said up top, like, the players have no rules. Like, if you can go capture resources, any way you do that is valid. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, there's international law and this and that. I go, okay, then how come like Israel can just go flatten Gaza? Like, that's against all the international laws, but they did it anyway. How come the United States can just go into Iraq and go, this is ours now? You know, like, we're going to run this for a while. This is, you know, because they can't. It's not because, and that was in violation of all sorts of international laws and against all sorts of protests, but it's all paper. Like, nobody cares about the paper if you get an aircraft carrier. So, what Bitcoin does is it changes that. They go, hey, we're going to come take all the Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Yeah, GFY, dude. Like,
yeah, you can't.
If you can extract my memories, then go nuts. Yeah. But otherwise.
Right. That's where Neuralink becomes scary. Because if you are remembering your seed phrase, what if now the AI has access to your, or if there's a company behind the AI that can peep into your seed phrase memories if you remember it. So maybe it's not so safe to store it in your brain going forward in the future. Yeah. But the one thing dangerous. That. Yeah, right. But the thing is I don't know if you ever saw this, kind of reminds me of this documentary called The Social Dilemma. I don't know if you ever saw that.
It sounds familiar, but remind me.
It's a documentary about how the most important resource, which I think Bitcoin is the most important resource being mined today because it's so scarce. But they say in that documentary, the most important resource being mined today is people's attention. You know, so the attention, you know, ad money, all this stuff, you know, so companies benefit from grabbing your attention. And I think that one thing Bitcoin also does is, if that's considered the most important resource besides Bitcoin, Bitcoin takes people's attention away from all of the chaos that they try to distract you with. Because when you realize the root cause of a lot of these problems and know that there are so many distractions and terrible incentives behind a lot of the things that go on in the world, it's like Bitcoin is converting Bitcoiners into just getting away from that monetized attention and not caring about the things that they find most important or most engaging. So Bitcoin's also removing that, which is like, if they find that very valuable, they're losing people, you know, to that.
I love the way you said that. That is so perfect, because yes, 100%. It absolutely helps reorient incentives, right? Mm-hmm. You are not as incentivized to crave a new Cadillac. You're not as incentivized to crave the next TikTok video. You're not as incentivized. What you can almost universally see, if you just hop on Bitcoin Twitter or whatever, and you just go, hey, find some account where they're kind of into Bitcoin and they're kind of shitcoining. And then when they turn the corner and they go, you know what? I think Bitcoin is the most important thing. Like, I didn't realize how important this is. I'm going all in on Bitcoin. What happens to that account almost immediately? A, they connect with a huge social layer that is very supportive, very kind, and very instructive. They are more than willing to share information, help you learn, help you grow, help you get into the space. And B, all of a sudden, their individual choices change dramatically, almost overnight. Universally, you see people going, oh, I'm on carnivore. I started exercising. I started walking. I sold my car. I got rid of my house. I got this. We went and bought land out here. I'm trying to raise my family. I'm spending more time with my kids. I've changed all my priorities. For what? Because they got in Bitcoin. Like that is the fundamental change in their life. It's not that they suddenly had a come to Jesus moment and went, oh, I've been doing life all wrong. It's they got Bitcoin. All of a sudden their incentives just shifted 180 degrees and they go, oh, wow, I don't want to buy a new car. And I don't care what these politicians are saying. And I know exactly why they're saying it. They're doing this to manipulate me to vote for them so they can keep exploiting me as a resource. That's it. That's the only reason they're there. They don't care.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be exploited.
Just for votes, for manipulation, because they want to stay in charge.
Right. 100%.
And add money and companies. It's just the incentives are all wrong. And just to sway groups of people. And I think when you're stuck in the fiat system and you're the chicken in the hen house and you don't see that there's an exit or a way to evolve out of that, I think you're so angry at it keeps you more addicted to that stuff because you don't see that there's a way out. So you're just mad about it. And I don't know, you're stuck in this endless loop of just anger and stress and anxiety. And that kind of stuff they say, I think even in the documentary, the reason they do this stuff is because it's like a dopamine hit. Like people get this dopamine hit, like their brain sparks up when they see something intense. So it kind of wakes, like they feel alive because they're angry, you know, and it sparks something in them. So that's why the people are just addicted to that feeling. But then when they find out that there's a way out of it, you're like, oh, I don't have to feel that anymore. The longer I'm in Bitcoin and I'm saving my money in something that isn't stolen from me, you have more time to spend with your family and your kids. And you're not, you know, you actually get to do the things that are the most important in life. And it's just amazing to think that I think it's because of what you were saying, because I love when I have these ideas, but it's because of what you were saying that I've never thought about that before. It was the first time I actually thought about it. Like Bitcoin steals one of the most important resources from the traditional system.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Crazy. Spot on. I think, and that's one of the most beautiful things about it is like, because here's my core thesis in the book is I go, well, that effect is very visible and demonstrable to anybody that bothers to look. You can just go look and see what happens to someone's life if they adopt Bitcoin. You go, it gets better, like universally, right? So what would lead us to believe that we're special somehow and we're the only people that's going to have that effect on? I don't think it's, you know, like, I don't think it's an isolated effect. I don't think it's just the people that happen to get it right now are the only people that are going to have that effect. And now you're talking about this massive exposure, and albeit it's financial exposure, it's through intermediaries. It's not like true Bitcoiners doing Bitcoin, right? It's like a bunch of people glomming onto like Wall Street bro nonsense, but they're still getting exposure to some parts of that philosophy. And my theory is that some percentage of them will go deeper, just like everyone, just like people that start in shitcoining end up in Bitcoin and then they're full on Bitcoin maxis. Just like people that are right now starting in an ETF or looking at it and kind of going, hey, wow, like number did go up. What is Bitcoin? What am I actually invested in? And especially if something happens, like you go, well, I'm just going to put a 5% allocation into Bitcoin. And then all of a sudden you wake up a year from now and go, oh, that 5% I put in there is now 75% of my portfolio. Like, holy cow. A lot of those people are going to cash out. They're going to go, sweet, I just made so much fiat gains. I'm going to go buy a yacht. Yay.
Most of them. Yeah. Most of them.
Most. But there is some nth percentage that will look at it and go, wait a minute, that's a big deal. Like, nothing else has ever done that for my life before. What is this thing? And then when they get into it, they start going like, oh, this is not just number go up. This is all the things we've been talking about, all those benefits. But that trickles through everywhere in the economy. Every person that puts Bitcoin on their treasury, on their balance sheet or whatever, they are going to have that effect on some level. Number is going to go up and they're going to go, whoa, wait a minute. Like, we've been trying to keep up with fiat debasement for the last 20 years, like Michael Saylor was, and we can't. We can't compete with debasement. We can't improve 12% a year. Nobody can improve 12% a year, year over year. You can't get 12% thinner year over year over year. Sooner or later, the system is going to start to collapse. It's going to start degrading. And that happens with you as a person, that happens with the company too. Like if I have to continually increase the price of my microseeds or whatever for 12% a year forever, I go, that's sooner or later, you're going to run into problems, right?
Right.
But if I have to try and make my company 12% more lean to keep the price where people can afford it, I go, I've got maybe a year or two of improvements I can make that's going to get me above fiat debasement. But after that, I'm screwed. Like it's never going to work.
Yeah. It's almost like companies die against this, right?
Yeah.
They have unless to. You adapt and evolve and get into the system, it can keep you growing, you know, right?
Right. And so if your company is now suddenly growing, if you spent the last 10 years trying to get your startup going and it's just not really going for you anywhere, and then you put some Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and then next year you go, oh, wait a minute. Well, last year we had to lay off 10% of the workforce to keep up with debasement. And the year before that, we had to lay off 5% of the workforce because we couldn't keep up with debasement. This year, we don't have to lay anybody off because our balance sheet looks good. That's well, that's pretty good. All right, cool. Let's keep doing this. This seems like it's working. And then next year you go, hey, we can actually expand our workforce now and we can start doing some quality improvements because our balance sheet looks good. Like we're not chasing debasement. Bitcoin is chasing debasement for us. So they still have their fiat problems. They still have their fiat salaries and this, that, and the other thing. But their balance sheet isn't upside down every year, year over year. So they
More quality products in our lives because, you know, you're not trying to look for cheaper ways to make something till the point where it's bare bones and the cheapest you can get it. It's actually a quality thing that you can improve on so that you can get more customers and sell more of this because people love it, you know.
Exactly.
That's just crazy how it improves the quality because your company is doing well, you know, because of Bitcoin doing that.
Perfectly stated. I agree 1,000%. Now, just extrapolate that out to 1,000 companies across the world. And then extrapolate it out to 10,000, and then extrapolate it out to 100,000, and extrapolate it out to all the city governments and all the county governments and all the state governments and all the national governments. And you go, oh, what happens to the world when everybody is now able to keep up with debasement? You go, what does the world look like? You go, huh,
it's hard to imagine.
It's beautiful, right? Like if you just think about all the creativity that gets unleashed from that, if you think about all the, you know, thought and care and concern and desire to improve all gets unleashed at once all across the world. You go, holy shit, that's a beautiful, beautiful world.
And even what you're doing with your book. I mean, even what you did, even something like that, because there's people that do the open source stuff in Bitcoin. They just want people to learn. You're not doing it for monetary reasons. You're doing it because you want to share what your ideas and your thoughts. People, and when you have that sort of a base layer for people in that system, you just want to help others and you want to teach others, and it's more of like a humanity based instead of this I don't know, zombie kind of.
Well, it's literally the difference between being human focused and being fiat focused, right? And everybody is forced by the sovereign taking fiat, forcing you to accept fiat. They are forced by the sovereign to chase fiat, right? And so if that is your end goal, then you have to do that. And you have to do whatever it takes to make that happen. So that naturally degrades your social relations. It naturally degrades other things. And people are actively exploiting you to get more of their fiat because they need it too, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how you get the intention economy and all this kind of stuff, because they go, oh, this is a great way to extract resources. And what they've found, I think, is they go, well, hey, look, the best way to extract resources from this particular population is we get them mostly unhealthy, mostly fat, mostly addicted to spending, and mostly broke all the time. So they're always in debt to us. So not only do they have to buy our stuff because they're addicted to it, but they also have to pay us interest on the loans they took to get the stuff that we got them addicted to.
Right.
And they still have to pay the tax at the end of all this. So it turns you into, I said, you know, the United States is like being a hen in a free range pen, right? I go, well, if you really start breaking it down, if you really look at the state of people that are still stuck in fiat land, you go, they're much closer to the chicken in the cage than they are to the chicken walking around in free range.
Especially, you're so right, because I talked to a 19-year-old girl that just started a podcast yesterday.
Nice.
She's incredible. But she mentioned something called hustle culture, because that's what the young people do now. So you're really a chicken stuck and trapped because you have zero free time to do the stuff that you should be doing, or the creativity you should have, or the friends you should make, and, you know, And they don't have even the money to go out and enjoy their life as a young 19, 20-year-old when they're in college, because they have, you know, she said that they go to people's apartments and hang out just to enjoy their rent.
Yeah.
because they pay so much rent that they're like, we might as well stay here and hang out because we're
Yeah.
paying so much for this. So they, it destroys. So they're in the hen house, you know, they're stuck in the cage. They're in their apartment. They don't even go out to cool places or see cool things because they're forced to come home to the place they pay so much rent for. And then they have this hustle culture where they should be going to college, learning, enjoying their young years. And instead they're doing like three jobs trying to make ends meet. And
Yeah.
then that's like your, it's stressful. I mean, it's like
Oh
these
God.
kids, you know,
It's so
and
unhealthy. Yeah.
yeah, it's so unhealthy. And it's, you know, some people, they like to call young generations like they have it easy, but they're experiencing this type of debasement right into adulthood, you
Yeah.
know, and they're feeling the pain right away. So they don't have it that easy. They're actually realizing, wow, how do I even get out of this? You know, so maybe they're gonna get wiser faster. Maybe the more pain that's caused to people, you know, how that whole need to know basis, like Sailor said, the younger people are probably gonna have a more reason to find an answer. And that's why I'm glad to see a young podcaster like her start, because, you know, these kids need to find that way out, you know, more than maybe most people.
I agree. Yeah. And you're spot on again throughout the whole thing. You've been like, right, you're hitting the nail on the head repeatedly. I think it's all the practice from the micro seat, but
probably. Yes, exactly.
But
I
yeah, I mean, like if you just look like that's the maximal way to extract resources from someone in a consumer based economy, right? Is you make them have to consume some base level of stuff that keeps them right at the threshold of their ability to produce, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same methodology that Amazon uses to extract labor from their workforce. Like they robot you around. Your manager is a robot, and it says, well, based on our metrics, you should have done 14 boxes this hour and you only did 13, so we're going to penalize you. But that's the same thing writ large across the economy for a 19-year-old. Well, we feel like you have plenty of spare time, so you could be working more, which would help someone else get some resources. And then you'll have enough resources to buy the resources we're selling you. And you should theoretically have enough left over at the end of it so you can keep inflating real estate by paying your rent to the boomer that bought it 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that should leave you exactly broke at the end of every year. That's perfect
right.
for us. We have maximally extracted the amount of resources we can get from you. Perfect.
So sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
It's horrible, right? So imagine if you didn't have to do that, if you could just save and not get extracted from. The more you save in Bitcoin, the further and further away you get from that resource extraction game, and the closer you become to a sovereign person that owns property, right? And that
right.
changes who you are in the global political economy. So those of us who are early now and getting into it, provided, I'm going to quote Jeff Booth as I always do, provided the network stays decentralized and secure, it fixes everything. And it fixes it in such a profound way that I don't think people quite grasp what that means yet. And meanwhile, we are fighting the people that are pulling levers, trying to divide us, trying to capture, because the people that are pulling the levers right now to divide us are the same people that are trying to capture you as a resource. They're trying to get you to come to their camp. And once you're in their camp, they're just going to clamp down on you just like any other regime would, right? The promises are hollow always, and the results are terrible always. So if you have a third option, which we've never had in 12,000 years, never, it's never been available to anybody. And now Satoshi graced us with this beautiful gift. It was, hey, here's a way out of the mess. Here's a way out of the shenanigans, but you have to protect it, right? You have
right.
to. It's not something you can just go, yay, someone made something for me, so I can just
right.
sit here with my fiat brain and just run it. And like the Bitcoin Army posted a thing. I loved it. It was the best tweet.
Oh, I love that you're a Bitcoin Army
oh,
member too. I'm so happy.
Oh, they said, yeah, we have a 2100 node goal. I'm like, hell yeah.
How
like
great.
I was so excited to see that. I wish every single podcaster, every person who's got a voice in Bitcoin was shouting that same exact, we have a goal.
I have chills. No one can see them, but I
I know. It gave me chills as well. I was like, that is exactly... Like we talked about micro C a little bit. We talked about my book. I go, you can leave all that stuff in the dust. I literally don't care. If it gives me a platform to say the most important possible thing you can do as a Bitcoiner is run a node. Don't get caught up in the distraction. Don't get caught up in the arguments and the noise. That's literally nerds fighting over Dungeons and Dragons. Like it's just let them nerd out. Let them have their nerd fight. Right now, the best thing you can do is just spin up a node and
right.
make sure it's running. Make sure you have sovereign control over a node. And then we need as many people as possible to do that. And especially if we get people in the global south, Latin America, Africa, if any of you are listening, please, for the love of God, spin up a node. figure out how to get Starlink, figure out how to hack into Starlink so you can use that little satellite constellation so you can have better internet connectivity.
Mm-hmm. You know, you could do that. Money.
I don't know. I used to have a box that would hack DirecTV, and that was a satellite signal. So I go, Elon Musk has a better way to defend his network. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he's deploying broadband all around the world, like I go, that's huge for everybody because it opens up a lot of opportunity for node running in places where it's been historically difficult to do because of the connectivity, right? So for the love of God.
Even if they come together and get a Starlink as a group of people, they could connect their node to that Starlink in that area, you know, as a community thing.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Robin Sayer before this. I know you spoke to him today too. Yeah. He said he was meeting with you today. Yeah. But he was actually showing me, because I was asking him about the Start9, and he showed me his and how easy it is to connect to NOTS. And, you know, a lot of us in the Army are all about NOTS. Not every, whatever, either way, as long as you're running a node, right? But I love that it's super easy to use. He showed me how simple it is. And right now I'm just running NOTS on my computer, but I do want to get a separate, you know, like a Start9. It's so, he said, you don't have to have any technical, you just plug it in and it's
plug and play.
I love how excited you were seeing that challenge from the Bitcoin Army, and just our, like, that's like a, I know it's an ambitious goal to get 2,100 members to be running a node, but it's also, we have about 7,000 members in there. So imagine if we get everyone in there to start running a node, you know, it's like, I think the more people talk about it, the more important it is. And I'm so happy that you find that a priority to be, you know, to run a node, self-custody, and then, you know, microseed is the protection for that.
Yeah, if you need it after that, go nuts. But I mean, given a choice between buying a Start9 or buying a microseed, go get the Start9.
Right, yeah.
It's a little pricey. I mean, it's like $600 or something, but still.
Yeah. But you know what? It's that's why it's so important to do it, because like you said, it's not just someone created Bitcoin and we all just get to benefit from it. We want to keep it decentralized and secure. As Jeff Booth always says, you know, so we want that to Bitcoin wins if that happens, right? So we need to be a participant in the network. We need to make sure that we're all nodes in this network and it doesn't get concentrated into a small amount of miners, you know? And I know that there's, you know, there's so much, I think if people don't do it, it gets very centralized, right? I think that's what I think about that. So the more people doing it, the more decentralized it is. And you're participating in keeping Bitcoin decentralized. Right. You're, you know, so that's definitely what the Bitcoin Army is about. We want to, you know, show people or teach people about Bitcoin, encourage and support each other. But also, this is very important. And it's hard for me to admit that I've been in Bitcoin since 2020, but I feel like until pretty recently, and it's because of the Bitcoin Army and a lot of these talks that were happening between the debates happening between the node running and everything, it's because of a lot of the people in the community that would speak out about what it is and why it's important and how we need to keep this network decentralized, and we're all part of it, you know. So you have to, you should do your part, you know, if you're part of the network and you want it to remain decentralized. So it's literally it's like you're a warrior in this battle for freedom, you know, so you really have to fight for that, you know? So, so I love that, that you're on board with this and find it so, powerful and something that people need to do and spread the word about. So yes, that's, I love that. That's what you want to, you know, highlight to people and make sure they know that how important that is.
Well, you should also join the Bitcoin Army. It's a great group of people. Like, you know, Nova Noodle invited me back onto the spaces because I think Solo Satoshi was there on Sunday and I couldn't make it. So please tell him I said I'm sorry. I didn't even respond to him.
And I think this Sunday he's not there because he's away on a trip. So I think Michelle's hosting the space Sunday.
Cool. Well, I love Michelle too. She's great.
Yeah.
She's
wonderful. Yeah. So she's taking over, but I'll tell him.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Bitcoin Army has just been, it's such a great forum for people to learn and to grow and to ask hard questions and easy questions and whatever. I mean, everyone's so welcoming and so inviting. I can't recommend it enough. So I'm a proud member of the Bitcoin Army and I fully support what you guys are doing over there. I think it's great.
That's amazing.
You know, to what you were saying though, like running a node, is very much like, you know, it's It's like picking up a gun in the revolution, you know, like it's one thing to stand on the sidelines and cheerlead. It's another thing to say, gosh, I hope they do well. It's the real thing is to go, no, I'm putting my money where my mouth is and I'm going to go out and fight. Right. Mm-hmm. There's some comedian talks about, like, I can't remember the guy's name. He's kind of a funny guy, but he says, can you imagine going and fighting in the revolution? Like, you had to walk. Like, you had to walk somewhere and it took like 30 days. You know, like, what are you guys doing? Well, I'm walking across the country so I can go get shot at, you know?
Right.
Like, what kind of conviction does that take? Right. Like, you're just like, what are you doing? We're just walking around shooting at each other and mm-hmm. we're going to be out here for a couple of years. Living in the mud and getting our feet blown off and all this kind of stuff. And I go, you can just, like, I'm going to give a shout out to Parmanode.
Mm-hmm.
I'll literally get on a video call with you and walk you through how to set up your node. And I think he can sell you a node for like $300 or $400 or something like that. Right. And literally go, this is how to set it up. Like step by step. If you get lost, he's like right there on the video call, just helping you do it. I think Bitcoin Moms said that. You know, like she used Parma, right? So but there's a handful of great companies out there that are doing this kind of stuff. So run a node. Like it's so, the barrier to entry is so low and you don't have to learn everything about it right away. All you got to do is get the thing on the network.
Right.
And then you can dive into the weeds, right?
Yeah. That's why I think when we were talking about it the one day, I tried to make like a clip out of it so people could just see it, you know, if they haven't run a node yet, because I think a lot of people think that step one should be buying a device, you know, but that's why currently I'm going to buy a device. I plan on buying one very, very soon. Because it's not your computer stays on 24/7 all the time. You know, you shut it down at times and it's not running. But having as a step one, I love the idea of just going to bitcoinnots.org and downloading it to your computer and just running it. You know, so it's like you don't have to initially have a device. You could just do it on your computer. And then if you want to have a more stable connection so that you don't have to rely on your computer being on 24/7, then you need to have a standalone device. Yeah. But just for people to just do it, just to get started, I think getting to that 2100 goal would be super easy because if people are just trying to stack sats and they're like, I don't want to spend that extra money. I want to buy I want to buy more Bitcoin. I don't want to buy the node today. They could at least do that. You know, so I think I tried to tell people like, do this part first, you know, at least keep it running.
Well, so I'm going to give another shout out to FutureBit. Like I actually run a FutureBit miner. Mm-hmm. The thing that's neat about FutureBit is it's a really slick sort of consumer friendly package. It's quite literally plug and play, like a monkey could do it. Mm-hmm. And you get to solo mine. You can solo mine to your own node that they include with every FutureBit.
Really?
It's a little bit pricey, but you get to play the lottery every 10 minutes with that miner. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like you get to just sit there and run this miner. It can just sit there and run 24/7.
And it goes straight to the node.
And it goes straight to your node. And if you hit a block, that's your block. Like I go, you can contribute to a pool if you want. I kind of less interesting to me because there's plenty of hashers out there that are contributing hash, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you are like the guy from FutureBit actually replied to one of my posts on the Microseed account and said, you know, if we had one FutureBit in every house in America, that would be like 60 or 70% of the hash power. And you go, oh, yeah, that's pretty sweet. So let's do that. Because then you would literally have Satoshi's vision. Like when people talk about what did Satoshi mean by peer-to-peer cash and this and that, I think they get it all buggered up because they don't really understand Bitcoin as well as they might think they do. But in the original version, each miner was a node. So if you ran a node, you were a mining node. Mm-hmm. And then you would transact with other mining nodes. And that's how you would have a decentralized permissionless monetary system. The second someone invented an ASIC, it blew all that out of the water, right? Because then you're talking economies of scale, and then the money came in, and then when the money comes in, the economies of scale, then you end up with centralized mining. And it is 100% centralized right now. There are three major pools and three manufacturers of mining hardware, and one manufacturer manufactures like 80 or 90% of the mining hardware, and it's in China. So you go, well, that's not a great place to have that coming out of. And so I had an opportunity to ask Adam back at BTC Prague 2 years back. I said, hey, man, this mining centralization looks like a problem. What are we going to do about it? And he goes, well, yeah, that's a problem. And
that's all he said.
It's a problem. Like there's no solution for it right now because that's a lot of hash. Like it's hard to fire up that much hash. So I go, okay, well, what's the next best thing? Well, what software are you running?
Mm-hmm.
You go, well, if there's 20,000 people running the software, you're going to. But if you have 200,000 people running the software, then that's a voice. right? It's still a pretty small voice. If you have 2 million people running the software, that's a huge voice. If you have 200 million people running the software, it's, you'll never get a change across the line ever. Like, it doesn't matter how centralized mining gets unless they just stop mining. But if they stop mining and you got 200 million people running nodes, you're going to have 200 million people firing up miners shortly after and go, okay, well, now we just mine Bitcoin. And then we're right back to where Satoshi envisioned us to begin with. You're a miner that runs a node and you're transacting peer-to-peer and you go, well, that's Bitcoin, right? Wow. So that's why I say nodes are so much more important than anybody gives it credit for.
Yeah. And like, obviously, it's nice to run a miner, like a lottery miner, so you can have a chance at winning that block. And I do have a couple of lottery miners right now, and that's why I want to get my, you know, start nine so I can plug it in, like go into that node and do both, you know. But I think I love the future bit idea where it comes all together in one thing. So you could you're doing the node and the mining. But you're right. It's like it's not just, hey, I'm going to get a lottery miner. You're centralizing the node. So you want to have your own and keep it decentralized, but then just go through it and actually use the node.
Yeah. So that is legitimately a mining node. Like, that's exactly what Satoshi envisioned. And if we had 200 million mining nodes, then it's a whole different Bitcoin. And everything that we talked about through this whole conversation becomes a guarantee. Like, it's not like, well, it's speculative. It might happen as long as the network stays decentralized. Like, that is 100% decentralized and secure. And that is a guarantee of a golden, beautiful, wonderful future that is human-centric, not chasing fiat. And it fixes a lot of problems with sovereignty, property rights, property control. How the farmer treats you as a resource changes dramatically in that system. Mm-hmm. So pretty please, for the love of God, if you're listening to this, please, please, please go spin up a node. If you want to get really saucy about it, spin up a little BitAx and run your own start nine, or spin up a BitAx and point it to Parma node, or spin up a BitAx and point it to one of the other like resellers of old Dell laptops, or even better, just go to Futurebit, plug it in and go, done. Yeah. And you're done. Like, literally.
Can you plug in other things to Futurebit?
You can stack miners. You can absolutely daisy chain miners. If you have a BitAx, you can, there's a couple more steps to it, but yeah, you can absolutely contribute more hash if you've already got hash. As far as I know, they're still shipping with core 29 or 28. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Me personally, I'm just kind of leave it at that. Like, so, but that's just my choice. Right. And
that's fine.
And it's such an elegant solution. And if you're the kind of person who's like cold in the office and you always have a desk heater running, just put a Futurebit under your desk and tap into your employer's electricity and bandwidth. And
also, it gives you a little heat, the Futurebit?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It actually works amazingly well as a little space heater. So if you're always cold and you always want to have a little heater on,
is it quiet too?
Super, super quiet. Yeah. Wow. And especially if you run in eco mode, it's very, very, very quiet. Like, it doesn't disturb anything. It's super nice. There's so many ways you can mount the thing, but it's just an easy, easy and beautiful, elegant solution. They put it in a nice case. It looks nice on your desk. It's not like you walk in and there's a bunch of wires hanging all over the place. You go, what the hell you got in here? What are you, some sort of like weird computer hacker? Like, it just looks like a neat little thing. So
I wish I had an Ethernet port in my little office here so I can plug it. I'm like, I would like it under my desk in the winter.
Yeah, you can absolutely get that. So. That's my sales pitch for Futurebit. Mm-hmm. I don't have any affiliation with them. Like, I was lucky enough to meet them at Bitcoin Vegas and just say, hey, I love what you guys are doing. But we don't get anything for promoting it. I do get something very selfishly for promoting, supporting the Bitcoin network, decentralizing the Bitcoin network, and being part of the network, picking up that gun, running that node, joining the revolution, be part of the change you want to see. All those platitudes and tropes are $600 away. Just hop on. Mm-hmm. And do your part, please. It's the most important thing you can do, and you will help make the world a better place, like 100%. If you are running a node, you are part of the movement that is trying to improve the world, and there's no better way you can live your life as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's so powerful and so true, and just thinking about all the things we talked about in the whole episode, and just all the distractions and all the control and all the things that you don't want to happen to Bitcoin. You don't want it to be control, like, you're pretty much like centralized, you know. You don't want it to be centralized, so you want to fight for that. You just want to be able to be part of the network, and I love that that's so important to you, and I think people are realizing so much more now because of, you know, our community, but also just in general, people are just, this discussion is very important, because whatever's been going on, I think if it wasn't to do with the Core Knots debate, I don't think many people would even be talking about it as much. You know, and I think it would have. So I think it's great. I think it's healthy for Bitcoin. It's a good thing that more people want to run a node and take part. So I think it's a great thing that people are realizing, you know, because I would have ignored it. Maybe I would have just thought, oh, you know, I'm running a lottery miner. It's fine. But yeah, you have to be, you know, a connection point, you know, sure. That's what the nodes are, you know? So if people don't understand, I guess what a node is, it's like you are verifying things through your own channels, you know, you are literally part of the network. So, you know, I love it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Where can people find you if they want to find you on X?
The easiest way is at 21E15 Microseed. And 21E15 is actually a little play on, I got it tattooed right there. It's 2.1 plus E15. And that's the scientific notation for 2.1 quadrillion, which is the number of Satoshis. But it turns out, like, I didn't think about this. If you don't have the 2.1, then it becomes the wrong number. So,
oh, really?
As a web address, it didn't work out quite the way I expected.
Oh, well, 21, people see 21, yeah, but, I think.
Yeah,
them,
I
you
think
know.
I kind of get it. So, you know, I made sure to put the decimal point on my tattoo at least.
That's really cool. I didn't think about that.
Well, but otherwise, it's Daniel21E15 on Twitter. And I do a weekly podcast with one of the people in Microseed. It's Bitcoin Liberty Live. We do that live every Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific. So
hey,
come in and listen to me rant. Yeah, it's on YouTube. Okay. We broadcast all over Rumble, Twitch, Twitter.
Oh, that's great.
But yeah, I mean, it's just me and it's like a couple old farts just nattering about Bitcoin stuff.
Love it. So, get your voices out there, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I love that. Well, thank you for building what you've built, this incredible, you know, way to secure your Bitcoin. Thank you for joining me on my show. And thank you for having, you know, the vision for what's the most important thing and for sticking to it. So thank you for being part of the Bitcoin Army and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here. It was great. I really, really love being here. I love chatting with you today. So thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully one day we'll do it again.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yes. Take care. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.